just want to start this one with, you know, these have been going two and a half hours. Both Josh and I are not feeling great, so we're going to try to make this some 1 hour. So let's get all the talking we can get in the next hour so Josh and I can maybe get some sleep early tonight. So, Josh, just to get everything started, I think today there's two things that are true right now. One, Alabama and Georgia are kind of playing a different sport. They're playing their own game. And two, everything else outside of Alabama and Georgia is a lot of fun with all the crazy that's going on. Can both those things be true at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, totally, right? Right now, it almost feels like Alabama and Georgia are playing a different sport than everyone else. But you know what? That's, I think, one of the big benefits of a four-team playoff is even if Alabama and Georgia are on this other level, you know, everybody else is playing for the other two playoff slots. And that has been the argument for an eight-team playoff. And I get it. I mean, this idea that even if there's parity or chaos, if there's slots up for grabs, even though maybe we would argue that those teams aren't going to win a playoff, it makes it interesting. And I think it's still hard, too early to evaluate other conferences versus the SEC. I think the SEC has proven itself pretty well this year, but it's fun. And I'll tell you, we were bouncing back and forth top tens, and we might do that later in the show. I had really no comfort level trying to draft one on the fly especially without seeing the end of the day results. But man, parity's here. I can't remember the last year where I know there's the top two teams, but everything past that from number three through number what, like 20. And normally it's like three through eight, like eight through 15, right? That it's not just this little mini second tier and a big, you know, like 10 team third tier of teams. It's really just a giant second tier of teams that goes from like three all the way to like 20. It's like 17 teams. And that's exciting and fun. And we're going to have a lot of teams and a lot of losses. We're already seeing that. And I think it's not only is it fun to watch, but it's also somewhat maddening to try to rank them or consider them because you're going to have teams with losses that are going to have to be ranked pretty high because we're running out of undefeated teams with good resumes.
So we've got two. We've got two super chats, one from Isaac and one from Mike Farino, and both kind of centering around Ohio State. And I guess we can talk about this. Does the Oregon loss today help or hurt Ohio State? And more of a general shout out to Ohio State. I want to say this, Josh, like for me, I was really excited to see what I saw today. I did not take anything from the game last week. You and I have talked back, forth, sideways all we can about how bad Akron is. And you and I both said before that game, don't read too much into it. Auburn put up 62 on them. Don't read too much into it. Huff State fans read a little bit too much into it. On the flip side, what they did to Rutgers today, I think, did open my eyes a little bit to maybe feel like that talent nexus that they have up there is starting to gel a little bit. Did you get that feeling as well?
I did. Ohio State had been in a situation where they just weren't clicking. Things weren't operating correctly. Rutgers had been playing pretty good football, and I really felt like Ohio State, even against a not great team, was going to struggle a little bit. I mean, that's kind of what we're seeing right now from Clemson. And I think what we saw today from Oregon is that they're not necessarily an unstoppable team for sure. And one, you know, law firm CFO said this, and I think it's obvious, right? Oregon losing does not make Ohio State look better. That's just the obvious truth of it. But I think Ohio State has taken some steps past that. There's a reason that I had them, I think, fifth in my rankings last week. I felt like that game, I'm not going to call it a fluke because it was what it was based off where the team was at, but that was a team with a new quarterback and a lot of wrinkles. Week one and week two defensively, they need to be ironed out, and they're getting a lot better. Their ceiling is a lot higher than most of the teams in college football, and they're taking steps towards that ceiling. I don't even think that was the ceiling against Rutgers, but that was a lot closer to what I was expecting to see, and there are not many teams operating on a level to play anybody like a Rutgers-level opponent and beat them like that right now.
Yeah, I think right now, there's the question, I think, with Oregon and Ohio State really centers on, we're starting to get into conference or college football playoff discussions and elimination considerations. I feel like Oregon's loss today may have eliminated the Pac-12, especially considering, assuming Cincinnati doesn't drop a random knucklehead game, Cincinnati might take a slot in the playoffs. I think this question came up earlier. If Alabama and Georgia both are undefeated in the SEC championship, do they both get in? I think they both get in, unless that's a 70-0 kind of game. I think they both get in, and I think that's fair given what we've seen so far. And assuming we're talking about two undefeated teams at the end of the year, I don't think it's fair to say, okay, the loser of that game had to play the winner of that game. Nobody else in the country vying for a playoff spot had to play the winner of that game, but we're going to put up Oklahoma in, who beat West Virginia 16-13 last week, over the loser of that game. I don't think so. So that means, I think, Josh, you can also agree with this, probably not getting an ACC team in. So Cincy, Big Ten winner, Big 12 winner, might be fighting over two spots. What do you think?
Yeah, no, that's fair. And that's, with Oregon going down, it's hard to see the Pac-12 in, right? And so it's Big 12, Big Ten, and Cincy. Cincy has the resume to be in the playoff discussion. Since he does not have the resume to get in over a one-loss SEC champion, if it's Alabama or non-champion Alabama or Georgia. Georgia's win over Clemson, even though Clemson's not good, is still going to carry weight because that's a real out-of-conference team on top of the SEC opponents. Alabama's in the SEC West. I know Miami's lost a lot of luster. I will say a little bit different. They were a lot healthier, and Derek King's a good player, and they had a third-string quarterback. Miami is not the same as Derek King Miami. Not to
Same thing with Clemson too, right? Like, they've taken a ton of huge injuries. So that win for Georgia, I think, is more valuable.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, there's maybe an opposite argument with Oregon right now, right? That they beat Ohio State without some guys. But again, Ohio State, I feel like, is turning a corner. Somebody said, Trayvon Henderson for Heisman. I won't rule anything out at this point in the season. I think the second half of the season is going to determine almost everything. I think Bryce Young has a huge lead on the Heisman right now, but he doesn't have otherworldly numbers that he's got a huge head start on everyone either. It's all in the air is basically what I'm saying. It's all up in the air for the last six weeks of the season.
That's a real good point on Bryce Young too. And I said on Twitter the other day that Will Anderson's the best player on this team. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, Anderson's the best player in Alabama's team and easily one of the top three players, if not the best in the country right now.
Yeah, I would take him over Thibodeau right now if he were draft eligible because of what he does in the run game. But that's neither here nor there. The point you made about Bryce Young not having eye-popping numbers is very true. The way that Alabama's doing things this year and playing better defense, they're scoring points but very efficiently. So, you know, they scored 32 against Florida, only had three second half possessions. It was looking like they weren't going to get a lot of possessions today. And so, Bryce Young threw for, like, he was like 22 of 25 or something for 250 yards. He played a really clean game, but their scoring efficiency was really high. And if you're scoring every time you get the ball, and then melting the clock, you're not going to have those eye-popping numbers. So I'll let you take Bruce Rivers' super chat. I'll set up the question. If we did a rematch with Oregon, we'd beat them by three scores. We look totally different now compared to week two. Josh, you want to take that one?
I think you do. We talked a lot when Oregon won that game. We had Ohio State not very highly ranked, and it was in part due to, I don't think we got too much flack, but some Oregon fan flack. We didn't buy Oregon, and I kept saying that I didn't have a lot of confidence in Oregon. The reality is Ohio State was not playing very good football at the time. And they were playing good football, but just good football. Ohio State's playing a lot closer to very good football, and I think if you're a reasonable Ohio State fan and you realize how much you've improved, you also realize if you go back and play that game, you should have beaten that team by a lot, and right now you would. And that's just kind of par for the course. One thing I want to separate, because I've seen a couple comments on this, I want to explain it, right? When we talk about whether or not you're going to make the playoff or where we're at in our team rankings, those are two different hats I'm wearing. If you make the playoffs, I'm not talking about how I value wins or how I value the Clemson win or how good a team they are. I'm talking about how the pollsters and the playoff committee are going to look at it. When we talk about our own rankings and how good you are and whether you'd win a game, then you're really asking me about how I evaluate the team. So I just want to like make that comparison because we're jumping back and forth a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it's a fair point because, you know, there's other considerations like conference championships and like humans are humans and they're susceptible to as much as they are to eye tests, they also are to, you know, clean win-loss records. You know, right now, and we can go ahead and touch on this, Notre Dame, Cincinnati, you and I both said, so last week during the Wisconsin game, even though that game turned out to be a lopsided win, I wasn't wild about Notre Dame and you weren't either. And then towards the end of this game, you messaged me and you're like, I don't think either of these two teams are that great, which I also think is true. But even still, if Cincinnati goes undefeated, do you, Josh, not what you think the committee's going to do, but do you, Josh, based on what you've seen, do you put them in the playoffs?
Repeat that question again. I was reading something in the chat.
Cincinnati, based on what you've seen so far.
Yeah. Okay, so I caught the first half and then I zoned out at the end. Based off what I've seen so far with the teams on the board, and I'm about to make a lot of Cincinnati fans mad, I would not put Cincinnati in the playoff right now. We kind of get seen as haters because when somebody wins a big game, a lot of times we sort of evaluate how good that team was. There are no phenomenal wins right now because nobody looks spotless. But the reality, we talked about this early in the day, right, with Wisconsin and how they looked. We have to accept the reality that Wisconsin is probably not a good team, right? And there's, I think, a really bad set of perceptions from Penn State and Notre Dame based off the Wisconsin game. And I know Penn State's got the Indiana game and that those expectations reset. But I don't think Auburn's particularly good, which you're seeing right now against LSU. I don't think Penn State's particularly good. I think they're the best of that group. And I think they're, you know, I'll give you a hint, they're in my top 10, but they're the best of that group. Wisconsin, I don't think is great at all. And that causes issues for evaluating Notre Dame and Cincinnati, where if it were me, I don't actually know that beating Cincinnati was that big of a deal. I think people wanted Notre Dame to be a top 10 team, saw them blow out Wisconsin. But in my view, if Cincinnati played a lot of the other teams we're talking about right now, they would not be competitive on the field. I don't know that Cincinnati beats Arkansas. I actually don't think they probably do.
Yeah, I don't either. I think it's a good game. I don't know that I think kind of like the Notre Dame game, I'd have a real hard time picking that game. Matthew Miller, thank you for the super chat. He said, we said last week we would take Texas over A&M, and today we were kind of validated in that opinion. Although I don't love TCU this year, so I'm not excited about how close that game was. Who's the third best team in the country? We're going to do a top 10 later. Right now, Josh, I've got Iowa. I've got to have Iowa because I'm consistent in saying, you know, I'm going to ding you when you play close to Colorado State, but when you absolutely murder Maryland on the road, I think that was on the road. When you murder Maryland on the road, like, I'm going to give you credit for it. And now they've got a couple of really impressive, if you just look at the final score, impressive wins that I think maybe outweigh some of their other ugly. Now, I still have some concerns for Iowa, especially offensively, but to this point, what we've seen, and like you always say, compared to what everybody else is doing, I've got Iowa third. Where do you have Iowa?
I have Iowa third, and we've had them lower, and I mean, let's be real. They didn't look phenomenal the past couple weeks, but destroying Maryland, given how everybody else looks, is a big deal. And, you know, we talk about, like, I'm watching right now in the corner of my screen, A&M really looking like they're going to lose to Mississippi State, right? We talk about Texas and Texas A&M and all these other teams. Iowa's handling business. And if I look at them compared to, like, Arkansas and all these other teams, I think they probably beat Arkansas. And, again, my big thing is I think they more than likely beat Penn State by – on a consistent basis. The only team I worry about is Ohio State, but I was actually undefeated in Ohio State. The fact that Ohio State lost to Oregon is going to be a bit of a black mark for me all year. Cause I think that was a not great loss. I think it was a much worse loss than we wanted to admit at the time. Iowa's a good team. They're good on both sides of the ball. They're generating turnovers. You have to give credit for that. They've played some teams that are really turnover prone, and you have to admit that as well. But, you know, undefeated, playing well, not many people can say that.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, Ratio folded in a comment that really fits with this and just something else that I'd love for you to take, because I'm going to take Kill Tech 9's Super Chat question. He said, Josh, that Talia's really poor performance, I think he had 67 interceptions, maybe 68, I'll have to look it up, against Iowa yesterday, kind of validates and vindicates what you've said for years about Locksley's offense. And, you know, I know you could go for the rest of the hour that we've got tonight, but maybe go for a little bit, just kind of for the people that haven't heard you talk about it, how maybe why you weren't surprised about what you saw Friday night.
I've seen this from Locksley's offense dating back to his times in Alabama. And then, you know, when he initially got to Maryland, he had the same problems. And I realized it was probably a schematic issue. They're really reliant on those RPO slant passes, a lot of RPO quick hit shot plays. But they don't have a really developed downfield passing tree. They don't have a really developed power run tree. And that causes some problems. And I think Saban a couple weeks ago was alluding to it in some conversation I saw on ESPN, where he talked about he somewhat copying Lincoln Riley had integrated power run components to their RPO scheme. And the reason Riley innovated on that, and the reason a lot of other people have copied it, is if you're just doing this RPO slant, you know, it's a reading the linebacker and then throwing over the top. There's ways to adjust for that. I mean, you can crash a safety down. If you know that it's going to be the run here or the throw here, you can put guys here and there, and then you make them do it something else, but it's a one read offense. And the other part of it is it's really good at moving the ball between the 20s. And it can be really explosive between the 20s. But what people have figured out is if you play back defensively and you say, okay, we're going to let you run it. We're going to give you the run read every time, basically. Like, we're going to skew 2/3 pass, like on our heels every play, trying to take away that slant. We're going to drop it to coverage. Well, you're going to have to make hay running the ball 5 yards, 6 yards a carry every time you do it. And when Maryland played Iowa, Iowa could, just the same way Clemson did against Alabama, and this is where I think the blueprint genuinely nationally came from, Clemson said, we're going to play with a light box. They played where you should have had like an 8-man box. They would have a 6-man box. And they said, our defensive line is maybe the best in modern football history. We think we can manage with that. And they did, like 5 yards a carry. I mean, they gave up a lot of rush yards in that game, but they did it without giving up any passing yards and creating a couple turnovers. Iowa did the same thing. Maryland is trying to run the ball, can't really run it even though they have box numbers. So now you have these RPO concepts forcing throws into coverage. That generates a lot of turnovers. And when you get in the red zone, that whole RPO scheme goes away because you don't have the ability to get past the safeties. And if you try to hit the slant, the safety's up too close and it doesn't really work anymore. That's all a simplification, but you know, you play loose. If you can play loose and you can control the line of scrimmage well enough to not let them get 7 yards a carry, then you have a good chance of making them stall or turn it over. And then in the red zone, the RPO goes away. Now your safety can key run pass. And that's trying to avoid going for the full hour. But the biggest concept with the RPO is because you're reading the linebackers and safeties and you might run or throw, if the linebackers and safeties read blocking run pass, if they attack, they will get burned over the top. So the safeties and the linebackers play flat-footed, and that's why everybody thinks safety and linebacker play sucks right now, and they don't understand it's a problem with the RPO. But when you get in the red zone and it compresses the field, that goes away, and those linebackers and safeties can actually key again. And if you plan to just wait until then to key and play flat-footed, a lot of times you can end up with if you can handle yourself at all the line of scrimmage, you can end up with that Iowa-Maryland result. And I'm seeing that style of offense this year. It feels like everybody has made these kinds of adjustments. The drop eight scheme is very much philosophically in the same realm, and it's all really slowing down. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty big takeaway across the landscape of college football, and one that for whatever reason, Locksley just seems incapable of adjusting to.
Yeah, and it folds in again, use that twice now, into Kill Tech 9's question about Alabama being able to run the ball. And, you know, The rush three drop eight thing is something that a lot of Big 12 teams used to try to stop the pass heavy RPO spread and zone read concepts from starting, I don't know, 8 years or so ago up until the last couple of years. But if y'all remember, and the question from Kiltak is, do you attribute what, you know, was the scheme that Ole Miss was running, did it contribute to Alabama's being able to run the ball really well today when they struggled in other earlier games this year? 2018, Oklahoma ran for 8 yards a carry on the season. It was, I think it was a record. It was up there really close. And they faced a lot of rush three, drop eight scheme the whole season. And what people were so terrified of was getting beat deep. But that Oklahoma offense was uniquely equipped to be able to do everything really well. And that's why they dominated all through the Big 12 and really gave Alabama all they wanted. Josh, I mean, this is, and yes, I think that's why Alabama was able to run the ball today. And I think that scheme would be effective against other teams where it wasn't against Alabama today because Bryce Young could pick them apart. But it's an interesting philosophical question in terms of matchups and schemes. 2018 Oklahoma probably would have given Clemson a lot better game than 2018 Alabama because of the problems with Loxley's offense against that scheme that really Lincoln Riley didn't struggle with that year. What do you think?
I think that's a fair point. Their offense was probably better than Alabama's that year. I mean, that's a bold take given how effective Alabama was. But Oklahoma's offense was insanely good. They would have given up points, but I think they were better equipped and they schematically were a lot better at taking what was available. And I think they would have given Clemson a lot more fits. A&M just goes down to Mississippi State for their second loss. And at this point, we always knew it was sketchy to have them in the top 10. We felt like their quarterback play would turn it around. It just didn't. They're hamstrung to an insane degree by their quarterback play. The defense is not what it was supposed to be, but that quarterback play situation is just put them in a massive hole.
And I think the defense is still good. I just think that you can only, you know, live for so long when you're constantly facing three and outs on the other side. You're staying on the field and, you know, the opposing team is starting at your 47-yard line every play. We got a super chat, Cameron, asking, is Georgia's defensive line the best single unit in college football? I say yes. Josh, what do you say?
Yeah, I would say right now, yes. They've got multiple guys that are maybe the best at their position. I would say Clemson's starting defensive line would give them a run for their money if they were fully healthy. Yeah. Rosie and Murphy and Xavier Thomas and all they're not the same as Georgia. They're better pass rushers than Georgia. They're not the run stuffers Georgia was. And in that game, Georgia's line was a better fit for what both teams were trying to do, especially given how much they were struggling. But with where they're at right now, health-wise and all the considerations, Georgia's the best unit. You want me to, if you don't mind, let me take it and run through. There's a couple super chats we missed.
Absolutely.
Alex Rydell asked what would be the score of Ohio State Cincy today. And this goes back to the earlier comment about Cincinnati, and I swear I'm not being a hater. I would have Ohio State by 2 or 3 touchdowns right now. Do you agree with me?
I would. It's not a good matchup for Cincinnati on either side of the ball. Like the things that Ohio State's going to struggle with, Cincinnati's not going to really be able to take advantage of offensively or defensively.
I think Ohio State could have some issues with Cincinnati running the ball. I think Cincinnati would score. But Ohio State is athletically in a different planet than Notre Dame. Notre Dame's skill position play in that game with Cincinnati was not good. The receivers couldn't catch. There was separation I can give to the DBs. Inability to catch is a problem with Notre Dame. Somebody joked, Stephen Light, here you go, first down payment for the I Hate Penn State segment.
That's he funny. Actually missed the I Hate Penn State. We already talked about how much we hate. No, I mean, yeah. People think we hate Penn State, but it's just like, look, I mean, is it still 14-0?
It's 21-0. Like, Penn State is in my top 10. The problem is when you start talking about Penn State in the top 5, I get hesitant. And I'm still hesitant because we talked about this earlier. Wisconsin has proven to be a mediocre to bad team. And Auburn right now seems to be proving to be a mediocre to bad team. So you start putting that stuff together, I think you've got to give Penn State credit for being undefeated, and they're going to be undefeated against Indiana. I really don't think that's going to hold up through the season. And I think there are a lot of teams that would be undefeated with Penn State's schedule, because it's a lot like Notre Dame's has the same problem. Penn State's schedule is not proven to be as difficult as it was supposed to be.
Edward asked, he said he won't ask us about OSU playoff odds. I mean, if they went out, they're pretty good. Someone else said, unpopular opinion, don't let two SEC teams in, put Cincinnati in. I mean, I don't, from an integrity of the game and standpoint, I don't believe in giving somebody a chance just because somebody else has had a lot of chances. Cincinnati is not better than Alabama or Georgia. They would currently be at least a 17-point underdog. And I think they would get beaten worse by both of those teams, especially Alabama in this case. So we said Florida matches up better against Alabama and would struggle against Florida, against Georgia. I think Cincinnati actually matches up worse against Alabama, and I think Alabama would absolutely drill them. So I'm not buying that at all. We got another one. I'll let you take it. How much insight does the A&M loss give into Arkansas versus Georgia if A&M play this game last week? Josh, there, you want to take that?
We talked a lot about the Arkansas-Georgia preview. So for Georgia, unless I'm totally misremembering, for both the Georgia game and the Alabama game, I had those two teams winning handily. What am I, like 9-5 ATS right now, I think? I think that's right. I think it was 7-4 last week, and now I went 2-1 this week. And Ole Miss and Arkansas, I both thought were going to be very overmatched. And those lines were high lines in games that people expected to be competitive, suggested to me that Vegas was saying, no, it's really not that competitive. And I think that kind of proved true. Arkansas is a good, sound team. They're going to beat most a lot or play really tight with a lot of other good, sound teams. But if they play a team that has good, efficient quarterback play and a really good run game, because that Arkansas has a reputation for being a sound, like, physical team. They've got physical linebackers, et cetera. That's still a 3-3-5. And what you saw in the Ole Miss game and the Alabama game, hey, you want to do this? Let's go on this rant, because I wanted to talk about it, right? That the Alabama-Ole Miss game and the Arkansas-Georgia game are essentially the same game.
They are.
Can I make my argument?
Yep.
Both those teams were playing someone that implemented a 3-3-5 stack, the stuff that Iowa State did to some good effect. It was really working against spread teams. And the problem with Alabama and Georgia both, they actually have the personnel to be spread or power, depending on what they want to do, because they've got so much insane talent and depth at a number of different positions. And when they were faced with that, Arkansas and Ole Miss both didn't really have the personnel to deal with it, and they just got run over like a freight train. And you think, well, they can go heavy, right? But it's like, no, you practice one scheme, and you can't just put seven guys at the line of scrimmage and play with any effectiveness. And if they tried to do that, they would be so athletically outmatched, they would just get torched down the field. So the best they can do is just accept the slow bleed and hope it stops. There aren't a lot of teams that can do that to those two. And, like, I don't even know Cincinnati could against Arkansas or even Ole Miss, whose defense is not good, but it's not what it has been. I mean, it's probably average. But Alabama and Georgia present a unique set of problems for a lot of teams in college football. And they're going to make a lot of, like the Arkansas question, a lot of defenses that are pretty good look pretty darn bad, just due to matchup problems and their ability to, like, schematically do a lot of different things offensively due to the depth in their personnel.
Bruce asked what our top five defenses are. Off the top of my head, I would say Alabama, Georgia. So Georgia, Alabama, 1-2. I like Iowa's defense a lot. I'm not sure they're better than Clemson's defense. Maybe they are now that Clemson's got a lot of injuries. I love Wisconsin's defense. Iowa's got to be up there just because of the numbers they're putting up. But I think that they have a similar problem as an Arkansas defense, in that if they played somebody with real athletes, they would get strained. Do you want to take a quick stab at your top five defenses?
My top five defenses right now, Georgia, Clemson, actually, defensively, Clemson's awesome. And then it gets a little weird. I'd say Alabama.
Right. And what Alabama did today to Ole Miss is pretty special. I know they gave up 21. Some of that was garbage.
It's really hard to evaluate because Alabama's faced a lot of up-tempo, explosive passing spread offenses, good or bad. Georgia has faced, and Clemson have both faced, really a lot of slower-paced power offenses or less modern offenses, if you want to put it that way. They've been a lot more effective than Alabama has statistically, and it's really hard to evaluate the two. That'll balance out over the course of the season. Those three are the obvious ones, I think. And then you get into, like, Arkansas's defense has been good, but I don't think they're phenomenal. They've got limitations. Florida's has been good, but not phenomenal. I don't blame Florida's defense for that loss. They was special teams and other issues.
I think Penn State's got a pretty good defense.
Penn State, Cincinnati, Wisconsin, Iowa.
Yeah, they're all there together, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're all there together. There's a big group after those. I would say those top three.
Another question for you, Giltak9 with Super Chat. Does the model account for scoring efficiency? Is yards to scoring an effective indicator?
It does. It's funny because people always ask, does it account for turnovers or scoring efficiency? I don't have that as a statistic in the model, but in a sense it does because things that are analogs to that are what it's considering. It kind of looks at the data more directly, so to speak. Is yards to scoring an effective indicator? Yes, to some degree. Our model's philosophy, not to give away the secret sauce, but rather than just saying like points per yard or that kind of thing, it's a little more based around the idea that certain teams have breaking points where they start to score and where they'll score, and then they'll kind of be in a range and then they score a lot. And it's more like, it's more equation driven. It's more logarithmic. And yards, points per yard, where it really breaks down is if you get past a certain point, you're going to start scoring a ton, but then there's a ceiling because you only have so many possessions. And if you're below a certain point, you start to stall. So you don't just have your yardage, you'll quarter it or you'll get nothing. You'll get shut out, right? And that's where the points per yard thing really breaks down for a lot of people in simple modeling.
So I think that we haven't talked a whole lot about Oregon. We touched on Oregon some. We touched on Notre Dame and Cincy. Did anything really surprise you today? Because honestly, for me, nothing really surprised me that much. Even the upsets. Did you see anything today that really kind of caught your eye that surprised you?
Stanford beating Oregon did surprise me somewhat, just because I didn't have a very high reputation or expectation for Stanford going into it. They found a quarterback where they were somewhat competent, but they weren't a very good team the first few weeks of the year.
Tell me this about Oregon and Stanford, though. Did you have the feeling that Oregon was going to lose some random Pac-12 game and it was just Pac-12 team whatever, and it just happened to be Stanford? Meaning, like, they were going to lose one of these at some point, right?
Yeah, I had that feeling that at some point they were going to lose, and it was just a matter of time when. And I said this repeatedly. I didn't think their offense was very, very dynamic. I'd almost say they weren't very good. They ran the ball well. Brown is a dynamic runner, and he has some ability to throw, but he's somewhat limited. The offense as a whole doesn't have a ton of weapons on the outside either. And if a team was able to really contain him and the running backs, which are really good, and make him play outside that game, which is what Stanford managed to do, they don't have the dynamic ability to score. And that's kind of what you saw in that game. I mean, they were a better team than Stanford, even though they lost in that game. I will say that. But the problem is it's like Clemson, right, against NC State. If you can't score, even right now against Boston College, you can lose to almost anybody if you can't consistently score 30 points. And so, you know, like Oregon's beat up and all that. I know that. And somebody's noting that in the chat. But it was Stanford. Right. You know, like 13-19 Clemson, Boston College right now. Clemson does look like the better team in this game. Boston College could absolutely win this game because if you can't score, let's say it's really the number for me is about 25 points. anytime I have a projection or an expectation that a team is going to struggle to hit 25, you can absolutely lose that game because special teams and everything else.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, there's 4:51 left on the clock. Now Clemson has to defend four downs all the way down the field. Yep. And that's just not a good spot you want to be in unless you're Alabama defending a Lane Kiffin coach team.
Yeah, 3 yards of play is hard to stop.
Right, right.
3 yards of play is hard to stop, especially if they got like 5 minutes where they can take their time to get that 3 yards of play. You almost have to get negative plays to stop someone in a four down.
So what do we make of Michigan this year in light of the fact that, like, I think if we just took their play and projected it across all seasons, we'd have a whole lot of concerns, right? But this year, in a year, and I've talked about this for other teams, in a year that everybody's losing to random teams like Stanford, you know, Michigan looked ugly against Rutgers 2 weeks ago, and Ohio State drilled them, and sure. But, like, don't we need to be pretty high on Michigan at this point, given the fact that, if nothing else, they're winning games, even if they're not, you know, playing the best teams in the country. They're winning their games.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's hard to really criticize Michigan too much, given the fact that nobody is really standing out all that much right now in college football. I know somebody said Michigan hasn't won in Madison since 2001. I'm a weird person.
None of that matters.
Yeah, none of that matters. Like, right now to me, Clemson, the national titles they've won, the recruiting, whatever, I really do kind of throw that out the window a couple games in. Like, there's an expectation of where your ceiling is if I can see a team developing that's young. And then there's also just kind of where you're at in the field. Clemson this year is not a good team. They're not a particularly good team. They're solid, but they're just all around not a great team. I don't care what they've done. I don't care what your record is when you play at a stadium. Kentucky hadn't beaten Florida in Lexington since 1986. That didn't matter unless it's just totally in your head, which it was for Kentucky for a little bit. And then it can kind of be a bug in your head when it becomes a thing, but it is rarely that level. And you know, every game is decided on its own merits. Do you have any interest in doing the top 10? Cause we're having this discussion about Michigan and Penn State and all, and I think maybe putting something down in writing might be helpful for everybody.
Yeah, let's go ahead and walk through those, through our top 10s. It's getting late. We said we're going to go an hour. We're both trying to get a little bit under the weather. But let's get a good segment in. I'll go my number one, because there's a little interest there. I've moved Georgia up to number one over Alabama. And Alabama had their own blowout today. I've got some concerns with that defense. I think now we have a new piece of information with Florida playing Kentucky today and really doing nothing offensively. They were stopped all day, and they were able to have a lot of their way with Alabama's defense for a lot of that game. And Ole Miss, I do think it's cool. Like, if you're an Alabama fan, I think it's cool for you to see Alabama really shut down Lane Kiffin's offense. But there's still a lot of, like, it's 3rd and 19. Alabama has everybody set up in the right spot, and Jalen Armour Davis plays the underneath route perfectly, misses the tackle, and now they got 4th and 1. They go for it and get it. They've had that all year, and that just to me tells me they're not on Georgia's level defensively. The only question I have is, again, the offense. I think that Alabama's offense might be more dynamic and might balance that out. But for now, I'm loving the defense I see from Georgia, so I got the number one.
Yeah, I've got Alabama 1 and Georgia 2. And someone in a super chat just asked if they played right now, who'd win. And I'll be honest, at the moment, even though I have Alabama 1, I'd probably lean Georgia at this second. And that's because Alabama's shown some propensity to get beat up by the opponent's run game. Like, they're not completely holding point. They did a lot better against Ole Miss than they did against Florida. And I'm not sure that Ole Miss isn't to have a better run game than Florida. But I think Georgia is going to be able to really ground and pound on a lot of teams. The hesitation I have, though, is Alabama has looked more complete and explosive at times than Georgia has. I think that was more of a matchup issue to me when they play each other. But against there are a lot of teams with really good defenses, like Clemson's really good defense, kind of shut Georgia down, and Georgia could lose a lot of those games. Alabama's offense against most teams is going to be hyper effective, and there are not a ton of teams with the offense to keep up with them and the defense to be able to contain them. And that's why I have Alabama 1 and Georgia 2. And then, spoiler alert, because we both said this, we both have Iowa 3, right?
Yep. Yeah, we already did say that. I've got Iowa 3 and Penn State number 4. I think that at this point, and we said this about Oregon last week. We had Oregon number 3 last week. It's fair to give them credit, assume that they're good, and still voice your concerns about them at this slot. And I've got concerns for Iowa at number 3 because I think their offense is actually substandard. But they looked pretty good throwing the ball last night. I got Iowa 3, Penn State number 4. And Josh, my Penn State number 4 is another one of those that I'm not real comfortable with. But with everybody else losing around them, you know, Florida losing to Kentucky today, like, what am I going to do there? So that's what I've got.
Yeah, the moment you hit number 4, this goes off the rails. If you want to call me an idiot, I'm sure somebody's going to flip when we post a video in this, flip to the rankings and talk about how stupid we are. Look, man, I don't know what 4 through 10 are, and we've got to play a lot more games to let that sort out, and it's not going to be a power ranking. My philosophy is if, and this starts to really take hold at this point, I look at who you've played and how you did, and I said, okay, if another team played your schedule, how would they have done? That's the only fair way I can think of it. If you've lost to, if Iowa State loses to Oregon, I assume you're going to lose to them every time. And then I think, okay, if another team plays Oregon in that slot, do they lose to them? And that's a hard thing to judge. So my number 4 right now is Ohio State, because I think Ohio State would beat everyone Penn State played. I think Ohio State would beat everyone, you know, could lose to Alabama like Ole Miss did, or, you know, they could have the same record as Michigan with that schedule, et cetera, et cetera. Oregon and Ohio State are a weird pair because they want the head-to-head, but I don't think Ohio State probably loses that game that Oregon lost today, and to me that sort of trumps it. So oddly enough, I do have Ohio State number 4, and I personally think it's justified by my own rationales.
Number 5, I've got Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma at 5 for me is Ohio State for you at 4. They are one of those teams that has the talent and I think coaching to really put it on at some point, to really have the light come on and be a great team. Right now, I don't think they are, but they still are winning their ball games. Offense showed up today and they needed them to. So I've got Oklahoma at number 5.
My number 5 is Ole Miss. And this is where I'm going to lose some people. But again, I don't think anyone but Alabama or Georgia is going to beat Alabama or Georgia. And it doesn't completely excuse the loss, but it does a lot. And I felt like Ole Miss has been really dominant. Like, look, like you put Oklahoma up there, right? Oklahoma and Ole Miss share a common opponent. Ole Miss toyed with them like a rag doll.
Yeah, it's true.
And I can't ignore that. And that's why if you want to put Oklahoma 5 or you consider it, that's why right now I got to put Ole Miss there. Because Ole Miss moved the ball pretty well in Alabama. They just stalled on fourth down. I don't think many other teams are beating Alabama right now, especially at Tuscaloosa. So for me, it really comes down to the fact that I think Ole Miss would beat everyone in the country but Alabama, Georgia, Iowa, and Ohio State more often than not. And that means they'd be undefeated against almost anybody else's schedule.
And I think we'll see. Like, for me, I think that Ole Miss is the kind of team that could absolutely beat Alabama on any given day and lose to Texas A&M the next day. I think we'll see that they're going to end up losing another weird game, but I think we'll also see that they go like 10-2 this year.
I'm probably going to be proven wrong when they screw up and lose some games because of that variability. You're right, but
that's what we say though, right? Is okay. Make an argument for, if you're going to say LOL Ole Miss, make an argument for someone else that's better. And right now, as you've kind of hinted at, there's problems. Everybody's got problems right now. So the rest of our list, you know, Michigan beat Rutgers by 7 points last week. If that Michigan team showed up to play Alabama today, they'd have lost by 50, right? But the Michigan team that beat Wisconsin today is a little better. So that's the issue we're dealing with.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Move on to number six. I think we both, because I've seen your list now, we posted it simultaneously to each other. We got the same number six. So who's our number six?
I got Cincinnati number six. This is another one I don't feel super comfortable with, but they've handled their business, and I've got respect for that.
Yeah. Look, I think there's limitations for Cincinnati offensively. Ritter is doing a good job of hitting the easy play. They had some deep shots that were really important to their consistency in that ball game against Notre Dame. But outside those shots, they weren't moving the ball really well. And I think the defense still isn't really tested, because I have really major concerns about Notre Dame offensively. But given what's out there in the landscape, even though I don't think they're going to hang well in a playoff with Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, I don't think it'd be close. That's still good enough for sixth in my ranking right now with everyone else.
I got Michigan at number seven. I think that they're another team that today was a good win. I'm not super high on Wisconsin, but we give a lot of credit for handling your business against a team that you should handle your business against, instead of letting them hang around and barely beating a mediocre team like Michigan did last week. Like, we dinged them last week for it. They get credit this week for what they did to Wisconsin. Because look, Wisconsin's 1-3, but they've played, you know, Notre Dame, they've played Michigan, they've played Penn State. So, I think Wisconsin is a better team than their record. I just don't think they're great. So I got Michigan at number seven.
Yeah. For me, number seven is Penn State. And I've already gone over the fact that I have a lot of questions about Penn State. Wisconsin not being very good, Auburn not looking particularly good, brings into question a lot of why we think Penn State is a top-tier team. But I do think the defense is legit. I think the offense has some dynamicism. Is that the right word?
Dynamism,
yeah. And Edward Chun made a good point. Like, a lot of my list here is, who do I think the top teams are? The top offenses. Because people talk about this being the year of the defense. Either it's the year of the defense or the year of the crappy offenses. But there's only a handful of teams that have shown the ability to be dynamic offensively, and they're at a massive advantage. And Penn State, I don't trust Clifford, but they've got some skill players that give them some ability to score, to tie with that really good defense. And that's starts to become pretty rare on the list at this point.
Well, I'm watching this Auburn game, and this is wild. Like, Nix has 2nd and 4, 3rd and 4, and he's throwing these like crazy back foot boundary throws across his body a little bit. Like, this is Kellen Mond in a nutshell, like the same problem. Always trying to force these crazy hard throws and not looking at the guy that's 5 yards up the field.
You're not watching the Boston College Clemson game?
No. I mean, I've got both of them up, but right now that one's...
Yeah. Clemson 19-13 and punting with a minute 56 left if you watch this recording. That's where we're
at. They hadn't punted yet. So anyway, we're going to get through this. Number eight is Ohio State for me. A lot of the same reasons you said. I don't think I had them in my top 10 last week. I might have, but really I could see them inching up every week because these teams ahead of them are going to lose, and they're going to play Michigan. So we'll see. Who do you have at eight?
My number eight is Michigan. Michigan and Penn State are both sort of question marks to me, but I think defensively they're both really good. Offensively, they've got Corum, Dotson, like they've got weapons, and then not clear options around them. Michigan's quarterback play is starting to look a lot better. But yeah, that's my number eight.
Number nine, I've got Oregon, and this is probably going to get some more eye rolls because Stanford is a bad loss for a top 10 team. It's not a bad loss if you're trying to be top 25 this year, but for a top 10 team, it's a bad loss. But they also have a really good win in Ohio State, and they get credit for that win for the whole year. I think the Fresno win is better than they were getting credit for when it first happened. So again, if not Oregon, who else? Are we putting Kentucky up there? I'm not. Like, I think that they had a good game today, but they almost lost to Chattanooga 2 weeks ago. So I've got Oregon number nine. Who got it number nine?
Oregon. And it's the exact same thing. Like I said, if you beat a team, I'm going to assume that you can do it. You do it every time in that situation. not many teams are beating Ohio State. And if I compare you based off who you've played and how you did against them, not many teams would have that W. I mean, Alex Rydell brought up the question, how many top 10 caliber teams are there right now? Maybe four. they're 10. They're 10 because there have to be 10 and our expectations are off. But we say this all the time when people say, why do you have Oregon in there? They suck. Like, well, you got to have 10 and like, tell me what the other teams are that are so much clearly better. And there's just not. And that was a big win.
I've got Ole Miss at number 10. So we both have Ole Miss still in our top 10. And mine is a lot of what you said before. It's like, okay, you just saw, everybody just saw almost Ole Miss get blown out. And the easy thing to do if you're an AP voter is just dunk them down to unranked or whatever and not have them in your top 10 and just put somebody who beat a directional school today in your top 10, right? Like that's the easy and expected thing to do. But I look at it like, we're having such a hard time filling out a top 10. Let's say that Cincinnati had to play Alabama today or Michigan had to play Alabama today. Let's say Penn State or Oregon play Alabama today. Are we totally sure that they play within three touchdowns of Alabama? I don't think so. I think Alabama would have absolutely gutted Cincinnati today, and a lot of people would laugh at having them ranked ahead of Ole Miss. So I've got Ole Miss at number 10, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, and I had them higher, and I want to emphasize, if you saw the score and don't know the result, Ole Miss was driving the ball in Alabama a lot. They went with a high variability game. I talked about that in the preview, that was either going to be a close game or was going to be a massive blowout. And I felt like the spread was saying was 50-50 either way. And I agree with you. I mean, obviously, I have them even higher. Not many teams would be in the position to be going for it on fourth down with a chance to score. My number 10 right now is Kentucky. They're undefeated. They beat Florida. I know they struggled with Chattanooga, but how many undefeated teams are there right now? Not that many. How many teams are there undefeated right now with a top 10 win? Not that many. And there was somebody here that talked in mid-August about the fact that if you looked at the pieces that they picked up with Wandale Robinson, with Rosenthal, who was the best offensive tackle from LSU, Levis, the transfer from Penn State, to complement what was a pretty good defense, they were building a real team. And that offense is not phenomenal, but it's a lot better than what it has been, where it was terrible. And then defensively, they're good enough to stay in games. So I don't know that they'll stay there, but that is where it is. Oh, my gosh. Boston College is going to lose off a fumbled snap.
What a way to go. That's terrible.
So that's.
But it's great for everybody who took BC plus 14.5.
Yeah. Grant Harmon said, how about them Wildcats? I mean, I literally tweeted it. And we don't tweet garbage about a lot of stuff. We try to be kind of serious when we pump up a team. There was a lot of reason to think Kentucky was probably the most underrated team in the SEC this year. Beating Florida was a big deal. And I think that Kentucky's going to have a lot of close games because they're limited offensively, but that had a lot of people not understanding how good the defense was and the ceiling ability that they have to knock off some really good teams.
And that's been the good Kentucky teams in the past, is like they go 10-3. They win their bowl game. They go 10-3, but they have a lot of ugly wins and close losses. And that's just Kentucky. What's interesting though, is like, we're putting Kentucky maybe top 10, Ole Miss maybe top 10. We saw what Alabama did to Ole Miss today. In the context of how hard it is to put together a top 10, like what would Georgia do to Kentucky? Like, would you be surprised at all if Georgia beat Kentucky by 30?
No.
No. And that's what makes this year so hard. But to your point about offenses, Josh, we've seen three good classes of quarterbacks in a row. How much of this year being a lot of parity and a lot of year of the defense, how much of it is because the quarterback play, especially among draft eligible quarterbacks, is just not great this year?
Honestly, that's been, I know you're asking that because that's been my argument to you when we've been talking a lot. We've lost a bunch of really high-level current NFL starter quarterbacks. Do you guys remember how much of a drought there was in anyone being able to draft a viable NFL starting quarterback? And now we've got, like, I don't know. I don't follow the NFL all that well. But what's like seven, something like that in the past few years? maybe a third of the NFL, a third of the NFL starting a quarterback drafted in the last 3 years. I definitely think it's put a drain, and we've gone back to where we were a few years ago where there weren't very many high-level quarterbacks in the NFL. So, yeah, no, I agree with it.
We got another super chat from Kiltak. More Bama questions. Is there something to be said about Bama seeming to be good through the first half, then always giving up points in the second half? So I think they were a little better than the score show, or the score like showed them a little better than they were in the first half against Ole Miss, and a little worse in the second half. Like that pass interference at the end of the game was BS. It wasn't catchable. Alabama went for it, I think, at midfield, just trying to salt it away, which gave them a short field. I think in reality, though, they're not a Georgia defense that their backups are going to shut people out. But the flip side of that, Josh, is their offense is so good that we've seen this in the past. Like, haven't we seen Georgia defenses be a lot better than Alabama's defenses and still lose to Alabama? So, like, the answer I would say is maybe there is something to it, but maybe it's not something to worry about. What do you think?
Maybe so. A little bit of it is that they're often up by big margins. I think the intensity comes off. I think the aggressiveness from a play calling perspective comes away a little bit. And I also think a lot of it's really just that Georgia's built themselves to be big and physical and deep at the offensive line and linebacker, or defensive line and linebacker positions. And they rotate heavily and they kind of hold up better. Alabama, that reputation from Alabama has only been a few years. And I think it has more to do with the fact that they haven't had great defensive line depth in the past few years and outside linebacker depth. I think it really started that 2019 year, right? I mean, 2018's defense was really good from them. They kind of murdered everyone at Clemson, or at least Oklahoma. And that 2019 team just had a ton. They were really young because they lost a ton of guys from 2018 and they had a lot of injuries. And I think it's really just been the depth situation at Georgia and Alabama, because Georgia's depth in the front seven is uniquely good in college football, and even Alabama can't replicate that.
A couple of quick super chats, and we are winding down, y'all. We said an hour. We might go a little bit longer, but not too much. UConn is about to beat Vanderbilt. Can they get booted from the SEC? No, because they have other sports that they're actually pretty good at, and there's a lot of money in that school. But it is wild because UConn is so bad. Like, they didn't even have a football team last year. So bad. I can't put my brain around it. And then one other quick one. Ohio State offense versus Georgia defense. Who you taking? Josh, I'm taking Georgia defense all day long in that equation, especially with CJ Stroud. What do you think?
Right now, yeah. I know they look really good and they've looked explosive. That's going to serve them well to get through the Big Ten schedule and to build on what they need to build on. Playing at Georgia is a completely different animal, both in terms of pass rush, in terms of separation from coverage, and they're not going to be able to run the ball well enough to get the looks they need to get to be able to throw the ball the way they've been throwing. They're not there yet. Maybe they can get there. They've got the pieces to get there, but that's Georgia's defense is kind of other level right now.
So can we talk just for a couple of minutes on, like, Texas, Oklahoma is pretty interesting this year, right? Because, like, coming into the season, the thought was that Texas was so far ahead, or Oklahoma was so far ahead of Texas, that it wasn't really this year. It was maybe going to be next year. But, I mean, I feel like Texas can do some things to Oklahoma and strain them in ways that might make that game really interesting. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma didn't make my top 10, right? Even though they're undefeated. I said, how many undefeated teams are there? And I actually thought through Oklahoma or Kentucky, because I was just trying to figure out who to throw in as my 10th team. And it came down to the fact of, well, what has Oklahoma done that Kentucky hasn't been able to do? Because they've been struggling with some not great teams. Their ceiling's really high, but it's not showing up on the field. I think their defense is not quite what Oklahoma fans were thinking it was going to be, which was probably unrealistic based off that Florida game where Florida was playing literally all backups with 3 days practice. Texas is rounding into form. They're really physical. That's going to be a serious game. If you can't put away Kansas State, you're going to have troubles with Texas. Even though, like you said, Texas had their issues with TCU. I definitely think it's wide open in the Big 12 for sure. So, man, if Texas beats Oklahoma, though, you got a real problem with Arkansas having beaten Texas.
Yeah. Not,
people that don't want two SEC teams in. we're darn near guaranteed as it is.
Yeah.
It's honestly a lot like if 2011 had a 4-team playoff where Alabama and LSU were just straight murdering people. Mm-hmm. And there's the question of whether Oklahoma State should be in over Alabama. But if you had a 4-team playoff, there was no question Alabama and LSU were going to both end up in a 4-team playoff.
Right.
None.
And interestingly, Oregon, who finished number 3 that year, got killed by LSU to open mm-hmm. the season.
In the opener, yeah. And it wasn't even as close as the score. They were just brutalized.
Alex has asked a couple times. I want to make sure we touch on it. He's a good friend of the program, too. Where does Florida go from here? I think it's an interesting question because they had really the entire – it's crazy what this game has done to them. Like, they had the entire plate of opportunities ahead of them. Had they won out, beat Georgia – you know, they could play Alabama in a rematch in the SEC championship game, maybe go to the playoffs. Now, they're not going to win their division because Georgia, even if Georgia lost to Florida, they're not losing twice this year. So where does Florida go this year? Josh, don't you think? Like, we talked sort of early in the season. We didn't expect them to be – like, they lost a lot last year. We didn't expect them to be national title contenders. So maybe, you know, going 9-3 and winning a bowl game is not – terrible, right? Like this loss isn't the end of the world.
It's really not. I had Kentucky as a sleeper team in the East. I thought they were grossly underrated. We didn't talk a ton about Florida. I hadn't admitted it, and I will finally now. I didn't have very high expectations of Florida. And we did our Alabama Florida preview. I probably wrongly tried not to be too negative of it, but I knew how many pieces they'd lost. I knew what they looked like when they played Oklahoma in the bowl. And those same guys that were starting in that game are the guys that are starting now. They're honestly a lot better than I expected them to be, given how much turnover they had. And that is not a team that is recruited at an extremely high level. Mullen's done a great job of the transfer portal, but they're not a top 5 recruiter. I think you keep plugging away. I mean, I think they can win out the rest of their schedule. That will be a very, you know, a 10-win season. Regular season's a rare thing. And who knows with, I say the rest of the schedule, they got to play Georgia, but who knows what happens with the Georgia game, right? I'm kind of chalking that up to my loss. So you can lose to Georgia, win a bowl, 10 wins in a major rebuilding year where you lost a ton of pieces. It's going to happen. I mean, teams lose 3 games in a season when they lose that many pieces, unless you're a top 5 consistent recruiter, and they're just not. So that's just reality this season.
And isn't it fair for even a lot of these teams to put it in the context of what's going on this year? Like, everybody's losing to everybody this year. So if you even drop one more weird game this year and Georgia and go 9-4, you know, given what other people are dealing with in terms of who they're losing to, I don't think you can be upset about it. Josh, I got one more question and we can start to wind this thing down. This year, given all the turmoil, isn't this an opportunity or wasn't this an opportunity for some teams who maybe were good brand names but haven't been great to find a shot in the arm and really kind of cement themselves as being good and bringing that brand name back in their households and getting some recruiting momentum? Like, isn't this the kind of year where that happens, like where you get yourself off the mat with opportunities? And if so, is it kind of bad for teams like Nebraska, USC, Tennessee, that is it's not happening for them?
Well, I mean, Tennessee, what the heck happened in Missouri? Sorry, Tennessee with just raked them over the coals. I don't know if it's bad for them, but it's going to be an interesting test of a theory that we get thrown at us on Twitter and in comments all the time. And it's this idea that the playoff needs to be expanded because if you expand the playoff, people get access, they get exposure, then the recruiting will improve, and then there'll be more parity in the sport. Personally, I've always believed that that's not going to actually happen. because I think the brand name and the coaches and the resources and facilities are what really drives recruiting almost more than success. You need both to be at a super high level, but you know, the where you want to play in a school that has its own dedicated weight room and a lounge with Xboxes and everything else and in between, especially now with NIL, it's a whole other level. So it's, I don't know that I do agree with it, but I think it tests whether or not I'm right about it. And it is certainly an opportunity for schools to beat some of the name brand teams that have been, you know, bigger than them or better than them. Mississippi State over A&M, right? Mississippi State looks decently good this year. They might actually make a record name for themselves. Arkansas has a completely viable, if not favored to be at this point, second in the SEC West, right? Now that's a school that has resources and has some identity and has some history, and they absolutely could get some momentum on the recruiting trail that they haven't had and turn some things around. And I think Arkansas is probably, now that I'm saying it, is the prime example of what you're trying to get at, right?
Yep,
a team that has been down. Tennessee, if they could turn things around, might be in the same boat. They've got the ability with that program in history to take a step forward. I think the mistake is thinking in that it's going to be, frankly, that it's going to be a Cincinnati. You know, joining the Big 12 might make a big push there, but you still have a lot of limitations that you're going to be dealing with because of all the resources these other programs have in the history there. But the programs like Iowa, like Arkansas, like Tennessee, they have huge opportunities. USC was on this list and then they, you know, set that on fire and threw it in a dumpster. They definitely have an opportunity to turn things around because there's no reason why they can't recruit at a high level. They've got the resources other teams have.
So a Texas Tech fan said the trope that's tossed out by every non-SEC fan out there, the SEC is not deep this year. It's just Alabama and Georgia and everybody else. The team you just talked about, Arkansas, beat the crap out of Texas, who might win the Big 12. And that's what I always say when people are like, oh, well, the SEC is not very deep. It's Alabama and everybody else. It's like, okay, but you're comparing them after they just lost to Alabama or just lost to Georgia. What is the fourth or fifth best team in your conference doing or other conferences doing? Like, who's the fifth best team in the Pac-12 right now? And would they beat the fifth best team in the SEC? Same question for ACC. I think the Big Ten's got some decent teams, but like where there's depth, maybe a little more depth there, none of them have a team that's playing with Alabama or Georgia right now. So don't you find that always a little bit funny? Like it may be broken clock. It's going to be right one time, but generally it's not.
Well, you know, to give an example, right? NC State is a ranked ACC team that is second in the Atlantic and beat Clemson. And Mississippi State, who's a very mediocre SEC West team, physically manhandled them for most of the game.
Beating by two touchdowns.
People always want to go like four or five teams deep in the SEC and talk about like, well, Auburn's not that great. They lost to Penn State or et cetera. But they never really want to do the same exercise in the other conference and say, okay, well, what is the fifth best team in the ACC and the fifth best team in the Big Ten? Because you're going to find it's not a great team. The one conference with an argument might be the Big Ten because they do look pretty good. But it's a little sketchy, right? Because they're out of conference play not looking so hot. Ohio State losing to Oregon, not necessarily the best look. Wisconsin gets blown out by Notre Dame, right?
Penn State-Auburn is a direct comparison.
Right. Penn State-Auburn is actually, in my view, really a bad sign for the Big Ten because I view Auburn to be right at, if not the halfway point, then the bottom half of the SEC. There are about six teams that would beat them on a, like, I would say, if you'd agree with me right now, obviously Alabama, Georgia, Arkansas would beat them consistently. I would say Florida would beat them consistently.
Ole Miss
would beat them consistently.
Maybe Kentucky.
There's not that many teams in the Big Ten that are going to beat Penn State. And they looked about evenly matched with Auburn. So it's easy to say like the Big Ten is the deepest, but I don't think there's really any justification for it just because the SEC is losing to other SEC teams. Because the SEC quietly has not been losing to other conferences, just to itself. Vanderbilt aside, because they live in their own world.
And everybody talks about is talking about Wake because we want an ACC team not named Clemson to be good. Wake beat Louisville on a last second kick. What did Louisville do get done to them by Ole Miss, a team that just got murdered by Alabama? So, Kiltek said, "What do you think about Arch Manning being talked about in every SEC game? Like, I don't love it. I think it's maybe free and constant publicity that I get kind of sick of. We gotta go. I'm gonna let you finish with this last question, Josh. Super chat from Will C. People that keep saying Georgia only beat Clemson 10-3 are simply angry at college football in 2021, and we are not worth the time to argue with. Josh, I'll let you end on kind of a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, there's an argument for it. Georgia fans keep bringing up that JT Daniels was hurt in that game. Okay, but he still started over Bennett for a reason, and that may be what he is because he seems to stay hurt, and that's a data point. But Clemson's defense was – yeah, Clemson's defense is really, really good. That's why they just beat Boston College. And Georgia did not let Clemson move the ball at all for the entire game. Georgia also thinks it's playing better. Like it when you talk about games against teams with elite defenses, and really there's probably three or four this year, they're gonna have ugly scores a lot. The problem is Clemson is going to lose 13-10 to Boston College, and then they're going to turn around and beat, an Iowa 13-10 because they're going to keep the score really low, and it's going to be one punt return or one long touchdown play, and they're going to make every game look ugly and close. And that's what elite teams with elite defenses do. But Georgia, I think, is taking some steps forward offensively, and that's, you know, I think at the end of the day, that's kind of the really important part to it. There's one more super chat here. Well, yeah, you got it. We'll see. I think there's one more we missed, but I'm not sure we can keep going with them, guys. You've dropped one or two more, and I'm running out of juice.
Yep. I am too. I'm going to give one parting shot for today, and I'll let you have the last one. For me today, it was a lot of what I expected and some of what I didn't expect, but I still am loving the season, even if today was the day that Alabama and Georgia kind of separated themselves fully from the pack and eliminated a lot of those question marks of whether or not it was going to be a complete 2007 type of season. I can enjoy all of the rest of the turmoil, even though I know that our fate at the end of the year is probably watching Alabama and Georgia twice. And nobody really wants that. But when we get too obsessed with those things, that's how we end up not wanting to watch bowl games. And I don't ever want to get into that place. So I'm going to enjoy all the other crazy, even though I know these two teams are probably better than everybody else. And you were right about Anthony Richardson. We saw him get in the game tonight, and there was a reason he wasn't the starter coming out of fall camp. I wanted to make sure that I touched on that. But give us a parting shot.
I mean, my parting shot is the season's going to continue to evolve. Offenses are going to get better. And I really, truly believe, I'm like reading the comments right now, there are some conclusions we've reached about teams that are good or elite or top 10 that I think are grossly inaccurate because there are a lot of teams that have played in bubbles. And especially when you talk about really high level defenses and things, it can give you a false sense of these teams are bad because they're struggling, but they're just struggling because they're a bunch of really good defenses. And these teams are really good because they've blown out a bunch of teams, but they've played really bad teams. And I would virtually guarantee you there is a top five or top 10 team right now that will finish the season unranked. And when we look back at it, we'll go, and frankly, Penn State is the best candidate based off who they've played and how they've looked on this list for this, and that's why I keep hating on them, that we'll look back and go, you know what? It turns out those teams just weren't all that good. And when they got later in the schedule and they played the better teams in their schedule, and I'm going to pull them up right now with Penn State. So I'll say, you know, this is what you're going to have to do to establish like that you're a better team, right? You're going to play Iowa. You need to beat Iowa. You're going to play Ohio State. You're going to play Michigan. You're going to play Michigan State that I don't think is phenomenal, but they're pretty good. I think it is entirely within the realm of possibility that a team with Penn State schedule could could be 5-0 and could drop every one of those games that I just listed. I'm not saying Penn State will. I'm just saying it's possible. And there are going to be one or two examples of that, of a team that's a top 10 team right now that's going to drop four or five games the remainder of the year, I think. Maybe not that many, but a lot of games. And I think it's going to keep making the season interesting and entertaining because people are going to fall and people are going to move up. And debating who's the third or fourth best team in the playoff, I guarantee you, is going to be really fun.
All right, Al, thanks for showing up Saturday night. I think this is our biggest, you know, single, you know, concurrent users live chat we've ever done. It's a lot of fun. Not as long as we normally go. We talked in the open that we had to cut it short tonight for various reasons. But look forward to putting out some previews for y'all this week. Thanks so much, y'all. Have a great weekend. See you Monday. God bless.